So here in the rather quiet spotlights at the Merchant Hall, we're sitting near the stage, and I'm about to have the delight to talk to the receivers of one of our legendary Fringe Review Outstanding Theatre Awards. And we've got Purple Penguin Productions here, represented by the writer Kat Woods and the actor Declan Perring, who has performed all month in Belfast Boy. And I'm going to start with the writer, I usually do. And I always start with a moment, and it may not be an exact moment, where this play first got born. There was a blank sheet of paper in your head, in your soul, and then the idea came into being. Can you take us back to those moments?
Yeah, it's actually based on a true story. So I used to work with the subject matter, Martin Hall, in a restaurant in Clapham in London. And after a few glasses of wine, he would tell me little bits about his life. And one day I just thought to myself, aha, it was like my light bulb moment. I thought, I'm going to write about your life. And he said to me, no, don't, it's boring. And I was like, what? No, it's brilliant. Mm. So got his permission, and then it evolved from there.
But we hear people's stories all the time. What was it in that life story that stood out for you?
I think his character, when he would tell me anything, his main purpose for telling me wasn't to make himself a victim. It was more or less, it was just him trying to piece parts of his life together to tell me how he got to where he is today. And I think that one of my main objectives with writing the piece was to show him that he needn't to take ownership for every single thing that has ever happened to him in his life, that he can allow himself to be a slight victim in things that happen, that things don't happen to people just because they happen. But yeah, so.
But also at the heart of Belfast Boy is, I guess, I'm not sure if it's a message, but it's certainly a kind of a view in life that you can't heal without telling your story to someone.
Yeah, very much so. And I think that I had the idea for the psychologist in my play, and it was to help him heal himself. I'm not trying to make it out that I was his psychologist, but I tried to let him tell me his story so that then he had something to bounce off, because I think I was the only person that he'd ever sat down and went from start to finish with in his life. He's never actually done that before, and I do believe he has told me that it's been quite a cathartic experience for him, so hopefully he's on the road to some kind of healing and inner peace.
And did he see, when he saw the play, did the play then get changed with some feedback from him?
No, he is coming again, actually, to the play, but he loved it. What actually changed, which is really interesting, is his family dynamic. It was himself and a few of his family members came to see the play, and after we all had a few drinks in the pub, they went home and sat up all night and discussed everything, because there were certain things that happened in the play that they would never have known about, and everything just got laid on the table and discussed and ironed out. And in effect, it is kind of like maybe united them, maybe brought them closer together or something, I think. Well,
so there is some kind of resolution and healing in that process then.
Yeah. And I think that I feel that I've achieved sort of my purpose as a writer. And, you know, if I help one person through doing something, then that's going 100% towards my goal.
Declan, solo show here at the Fringe, Belfast Boy. It doesn't come more challenging than this, does it, for a performer?
No, not really. It has definitely been a challenge, but one that I have loved every single second of it. Actually makes me really sad to think there's only three left. I've just had the time of my life here. It definitely has been a challenge, and it's definitely been one that I've grown from as an actor, and I'm so thrilled that I was able to get the chance to do it.
So take me back now to those first moments where you first saw the script.
Well, the funny thing is, I got a call from my friend Patrick, who is a Northern Irish actor, because, I mean, I'm English myself, he called me up and said, Dec, I've just been sent through a script, and this was made for you. I don't want to screw myself out of a part here, but I can't in all good consciousness not let you be seen for this part. So I've written to the director and the writer. I've told her, I know he's not Irish, but he can do one heck of an accent, and I really think you need to see him for this part. Then I read the script, and I just completely fell in love with it. And my only thought was, this has to be me. I have to do this. This has to be me that tells this story. I was just so overwhelmed by it, the writing and the story itself, that I just thought, this is what I want to do. I want to tell this story. I want to make this life come to life on the stage. And then met Kat for the audition, and everything went from there.
And also, I mean, I've heard it before about someone talking about, I fell in love with the script, this was the script I needed to do. But once you've done that and acknowledged that, when you actually get to work, you have to sort of step back from that closeness, don't you, to be able to see it objectively.
Yes, very much so, very, very much so. Once she actually said, you know, the part is yours, and then we start working in it, that was when I actually started to brick it, as it were. I was like, oh God, how am I going to actually do all these things? I was like, how would I physically, as a one person, do, you know, there's so many moments in the play where I was like, how does one person do all those things at the same time? And I had to step away from my just love for it and look at it as a piece of text and look at it as a challenge for myself as an actor. And so how do I tackle this? How do I get over this hurdle? And with the help of my incredible director, I think we tackled every hurdle and reached every goal that we wanted to.
Coming back to that script, if I had a look at the script, is it full of lots of things in brackets called stage directions and this is what I want done here? Or was that left very much to the rehearsal room?
No, when I write, because I am a writer-director, I don't have any stage directions at all. I go in with a blank text, and I think that whenever you write a solo show, it has to be a collaboration. And I have changed the script to suit different things. And there's lines that I think are the best thing in the whole planet, and I take them out because it doesn't work. And I'm like, no, but it's my favourite line. But as a director, you have to just, it's almost like you have bipolar. You have to separate that self off and not have any ego whatsoever and just stand back and go, right, this doesn't work. And that's why it's important not to have stage directions, because then you can shape the piece. And the piece is very much a collaborative process, especially with shaping it.
Award-winning play, does that mean you've got to follow it around wherever it goes?
Yes. I am stalking this play. It is my baby.
but... You know, in terms of the writer in the rehearsal room and the director in the rehearsal room, it's a slightly sort of cheeky question, but how did the writer get on with the director?
Oh, God, it was very emotional. The writer is such a child. No, it was quite difficult, but Declan is amazing, and he's super positive. He's such a great force to have in any rehearsal space, because without him I would never have been able to have the discipline that I sort of like taught myself to have in that rehearsal process.
Now, without going too much into your own personal story and your own personal life, but I guess when someone who's a friend who could play the part says, I'm giving it to you because it was made for you, are they saying that to you, it's made for you as a performer, but it's also made for you as the human being, and therefore you're drawing on your own story and your own reserves to deliver this character in this play?
I'm not sure. I think it was mostly as an actor. I think possibly there was other parts of it that were, because, you know, I'd known him for quite some time. We trained together at drama school. It was very much so as an actor, I think. But there is also elements of my life that did help me very much so to draw on in this. And that was something that we went through a lot in rehearsal process, you know, things that I drew on from my own life and things that we just had to create, you know, from our artistry and out of thin air, from the script. But I think it was a bit of both.
And Kat, can you give us a bird's eye view of a typical rehearsal for this play?
Typical rehearsal is usually, Declan's going to find this very funny, it's usually 90% of me talking about myself and then 10% doing the actual play. There is quite a lot of play in the rehearsal process, especially whenever you're dealing. If you deal with such subject matters that we deal with in this play and they're so sensitive, you have to have that element of fun. Otherwise, it will become a black hole, a vortex where nothing will get created and you can't let that happen because you will close yourself off. So I think a lot of there has been, for such a dark subject matter, we have come out of it on top slightly. You know, we've had to control that and shut it down in rehearsals and leave with it there, I think, which is really important, and get on with your own everyday life. Otherwise, it would be really bleak. I also hold a lot of kudos to, like, Jaffa cakes, Oreos, any type of biscuit. There are other biscuits
tea,
available.
Tea as well.
Well, you've got the teapot for it now.
Yeah.
Just as we sit in a different space in Spotlights, which I think it's probably 150-seater or more, the Belfast Boy that I saw is in a, you know, it's in a basement place. It really is closed in. It kind of suits that, you know, oppressiveness of that part of the story. But as this will tour, and it may play places even five times bigger than this, how will that change if you imagine yourself on the stage we're sitting here with audience almost all around you going back a long way? Will that have to be done differently?
I think obviously there will be elements of it that will have to change, because at the minute, every time we've done it, it has been in, you know, a very intimate space, and it is a very intimate story, and we don't want to remove any of that intimateness of the story, because that is what it is, that is fundamentally what the story is. It is a conversation between a man and his doctor. I think it will be a challenge for us when we get into big spaces to see how do we keep that intimacy, but obviously play it out to a larger audience. Obviously that'll also be me getting a better grip of my voice. I'm getting a bit of a cold at the minute, actually. I'm just sure you can tell from the sound of my voice right now. So I'll have to make sure I've got lots of rest and recuperation before we start heading to Ireland and Brighton and possibly further abroad yet. But we're still waiting to hear on a few things.
A final question to Kat, and I'm not sure if I'm asking the director or the writer or both here this final question. But as you come into something as unique as the Edinburgh Fringe, which is, you know, a run of 25, 30 shows. You came in, you know, and you saw it on its first day, and now we're coming towards the end. What's happened to your journey with this piece as both a writer and a director?
Well, I'm also getting the cold cut because we share a room. So I said to Declan about a week ago that I didn't mean for it to come out like this, that I am now beginning to enjoy his performances. It had nothing to do with the fact that he has been amazing from day one, but I've lost that ball of nervous energy. And what I've also began to accept is every single audience is different. They're going to see everything from a different perspective. People are going to find different things funny. Certain people will lead laughter. Sometimes you need one voice in an audience to lead laughter, one voice, you know, to have that shock factor, and people follow. And I think I've now just let go of I've never had the ability to control that, but now I've just kind of distanced myself from wanting to control that kind of a thing. So now I actually enjoy watching it. Now I'm like, yeah, this is actually good.
These are the usual gifts of a good Edinburgh Fringe, that you get to enjoy it by the end and you catch a cold.
Yeah.
Declan Perring and Kat Woods, thank you very much indeed.
Oh, thank you very much.